The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. For more Nerdy Show podcasts, community forums, and learn how you can support this and other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
Welcome to Flame On. I am Brian. I'm here with two of our fellow cast members. I have Jared here. And I have Jeff.
Go Seahawks.
Welcome back.
Hi. I had to do some stuff.
What you may not realize is Jeff is actually an amalgam of Eric and Oral, so that's why they cannot all be together at the same time.
I did this whole, if you go back to Dragon Ball, Eric and Oral fused and created me.
It's crazy.
That's unbelievable.
Exactly. It doesn't make any sense, and yet, here I am.
Yes. How could Eric and Oral turn into a straight man?
Well, they're so gay together, I think by their powers combined, it pushes it over the spectrum.
So in every straight man is two gay men fighting it out.
Or there wants to be two gay men. Hey!
There you go.
All right. So, we're obviously a little short staffed this month. We had planned to have a full cast recording, but as life goes, things don't always work out the way we hope.
Rolling Stones wrote a song about that, I think. Can't always get what you want.
But you try sometime.
You get what you need.
Well, you just might find.
But
no, we're all here. We're fun. We're going to be doing it a little light, a little having fun. Lots of stuff to talk about, so you know, we're not going to not put this out. Myself, I'm just back from Mid-Atlantic Leather. Yeah. That is a convention in D.C., and I will be talking about that here just a bit. But before we do that, I think we should just dive in. Talk about the big news in movies.
Oscars nominations.
Oscars. Who's hosting the Oscars this year? Do you remember? Neil Patrick? Is he doing it?
Did he? Did he get upgraded?
I want to say he did. Research team will have to look into this.
What? Tina and Amy were the Golden Globes.
Yes. They did a good job from what I've heard. I haven't watched an award show in forever.
It's definitely not Chris Rock.
It is Neil Patrick Harris.
Oh, cool.
Because I remembered he had hosted the Tonys very successfully for years. And I think then graduated and did like
Emmys.
I think he
something?
Did the Emmys. But you know, obviously we're big Neil Patrick Harris fans. Do you like How I Met Your Mother?
I appreciate it for what it is. It's keeping the long duration sitcom alive because there's always got to be one sitcom that's you know not the whatchamacallit, like the 2.5 Men misogynistic kind of thing. Just like I look at How I Met Your Mother as the continuation of the ideas that Friends put forth.
Did Friends do a lot of bizarre flashback and cultural references?
No.
Because that is the thing, I think. Pat's, of course, got me into How I Met Your Mother, and I've not seen the whole series, although I did get them for Christmas. That's what I was pointing to. For those of you listening, I was pointing over in the general direction of the box set.
Visual aids.
Yes. This is the giant tome of all the episodes. On DVD, which for some reason they didn't have a Blu-ray version. I'm kind of pissed about that, but whatever. Mm. And it's all on Netflix. But it had extra bonus things. And I've watched parts of it and over the years kind of accumulated. And the thing that stands out about the show to me is all the cultural references, lots of Star Wars, lots of just stuff that we would appreciate.
A lot of non sequiturs.
Oh, yeah. Oh, of course. They love that. But then there's a lot of continuity in the show because it jumps around in time. Plus you have the narrator who is the future Ted.
Bob
talking
Saget.
Talking about how he met his mother. Well, his mother. Talking about how he met his wife, his children's mother. And, you know, this isn't, we're not trying to dig into this show right now because we'd be pat for that. But I've found it enjoyable. And Neil Patrick Harris's fan, especially knowing that he is a big old Mo like a couple of us here.
Well, and that was the big part about this show is he came out after this show gained traction. That was when he officially came out to the public.
Which, if you know the show at all, he's a philanderer and like total ladies man. It just heightens, I think, the joke if you know the subtext. Anyway,
yeah.
He's the host. Oscar nominations. We have not seen a lot of these movies. I'm actually ridiculously behind in cinema these days. at some point in my life, I just stopped watching movies. And
some of them beat the release date. Like, well, actually, I don't know. I think American Sniper, I guess, was just like limited release, but that, I think, got a few nominations.
In fact, I'll tell you, Best Picture, American Sniper, Birdman, Boyhood, Grand Budapest, Imitation Games, Selma, Theory of Everything, and Whiplash. Now, Whiplash, I have not heard of at all.
Oh, Whiplash, that's the drum movie with J.K. Simmons and, yeah, it's...
Oh, that's right, he's a drummer. He's like a...
Well, J.K. Simmons is the professor at Juilliard.
Okay.
And there, the follows the main guy, Miles Teller, who's gonna be Mr. Fantastic in the new Fantastic Four movie.
Yeah. He's no Yoel Griffith.
But I guess it's a whole thing about, like, as a musician, he wants to learn, he knows how to play drums really accomplished, and everybody that's reviewed it said, like, so basically this movie's, theme is to be successful, you have to trade off being nice. Like, to be successful, you're gonna end up being a dick.
Well, knowing a few professional musicians, that's not entirely untrue.
Mm-hmm.
And being one myself, I think I've probably been accused of worse. But, in terms of the movies that are out, I really want to see Birdman. Is that out yet? If, like, on Blu-ray or DVD?
No, not yet.
See, I really want to see that one. I'm very excited.
We missed our chance at the Enzian.
I know. Well, it may come back in because, I know they're re-airing Grand Budapest because it did so well. That's the movie of all these that I've seen and I really love. So I'm thrilled that that got nominated.
Would you say it's your favorite Paul Thomas Anderson movie?
Moonrise Kingdom is still probably of the group my favorite, but I think I like Budapest as much.
What about you, Jared? You like the Paul Thomas?
Yes.
Which one's your favorite?
Paul Thomas.
Life Aquatic.
Life Aquatic.
Wes Anderson.
Was that Wes? Oh wait, which one's okay? Paul Thomas Anderson was Boogie Nights.
Paul Thomas.
Wes Anderson is.
See, we know what we're talking about. You're mixing up names.
The too many Andersons, and then there's Paul W.S. Anderson.
I do this a lot, actually. I mix the names, but Wes Anderson. And most recently, if you ever go to this is kind of bizarre, St. Augustine.
I know that place.
There is a waffle place there, and I cannot think of the name of the waffle place, but it's like something waffles. You go in there, and it is right out of Cousteau/Life Aquatic. They have the blue-striped shirts and the red beanies. And there's even a picture, I think it's actually an etching on the wall, of the characters from Life Aquatic. So you should go check that out sometime. Total nonsense.
Jared, it's your breakfast place.
Yes.
Well, St. Augustine's a lot of fun. But anyway, so Birdman would be a second choice because I've heard everyone loves it. I really want to see it, like I said. Imitation Game and Theory of Everything, both are movies I'm thrilled about. Being a computer scientist, loving science of all stuff, seeing Alan Turing's life and Stephen Hawking's life depicted in hopefully somewhat realistic ways. I have heard The Imitation Game does not get into the gay aspect of Alan Turing's existence, which, given that I am a gay computer science person, is unfortunate and a problem. But if the movie is focusing on his career and what, you know, I understand why they wouldn't necessarily focus on it. And I haven't seen it, so maybe they even give you a nod or something.
It's a very messy end-of-life kind of situation with Alan Turing.
Oh, Apple, the prison, the whole thing.
Well, and the chemical castration. Yeah. And,
it's bad. It's really, Alan Turing's life is, I mean, he invented computer science, basically.
Yeah.
Formal computer science, not the computer itself. But, like, you know, if they, I don't say whitewash, but if they completely strip that out, I'm not thrilled. But I still want to see it because I love Benedict Cumberbatch, and I hope it does well. I've heard Boyhood's amazing because it's that long term. They shot the movie over 10 years, 15 years?
It's something like that.
Like a long project. Linklater does this for some of his other films.
But this was the one he had, I mean, this was his baby. This was the one he had been putting in all of this work on. Because he did this, not to this extent, but the whole Ethan Hawke and
I can't think of that series name.
Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, and Before Midnight.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's really interested in showing how people age over the course of time and depicting that in the movie. And this, they filmed the same actors over, like, however long and showed this kid growing up and his family life. And I heard it's excellent. So, you know, there's really no Selma I've heard good things about.
That just came out in wide release, I think.
Yeah, they both did get in Run of the Wire. So, you know, it's hard to pick. American Sniper, I heard someone depicted as the first superhero movie about a real person, which I'm kind of interested then to
I've watch. Heard the other side of it where, what was it, Michael Moore considered it akin to, was it Michael Moore or Seth Rogen? One of them considered it akin to Nazi propaganda.
Oh.
Like, Seth Rogen made a comment of, this reminds me of the movie they played in the last third of Inglourious Basterds.
Oh, wow.
Like, so he wasn't a fan.
Huh. Well, Yeah, and I can see people taking that way. But, you know, hey, good for, actually, we're going to talk about here, Bradley Cooper, also a nominee for Best Actor for that. Steve Carell, who evidently did an amazing job in Foxcatcher, another movie I want to see. Benedict Cumberbatch, of course, Michael Keaton, and Eddie Redmayne. So basically the same movies that were nominated, some of those, the lead actors got the nomination.
Eddie Redmayne was in Theory of Everything, right?
Yeah.
He did Stephen Hawking?
Yeah, Stephen Hawking. So I don't know. The picture I'm looking at of Mr. Bradley Cooper, though, for those of you who are fond of the more beefy side of men, male physique, you definitely want to check that out.
Oh, look up some, there's some behind the scenes shots from when he was filming this in his short shorts.
Yeah.
Man.
Oh, I do remember seeing that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, that's what it's from. Anyway, yeah, definitely worth checking that out. Lead actress, so these vary a little bit from the movies. Marion Cotillard, 2 Days, 1 Night. Felicity Jones, Theory of Everything. Julianne Moore, Still Alice. Rosamund Pike, Gone Girl. And Reese Witherspoon, Wild. So these are actually like kind of departures. They're not the same movies. And I haven't seen any of these movies at all.
Yeah, no.
So I can't tell you who should get it.
Gone Girl, I kind of wanted to see, and then I heard more about it. And I don't want to sit through that. I dated that.
They totally spoiled it on iFanboy, and I was like, oh, that's what happened. Okay, well, whatever. I'll still watch it because it's Fincher films.
Yeah.
But supporting actor, we got Robert Duvall from The Judge, Ethan Hawke from Boyhood, Edward Norton from Birdman, Mark Ruffalo from Foxcatcher, and J.K. Simmons from Whiplash. Again, a lot of the same movies that were nominated. These actors played a supporting role to their corresponding main characters. But again, I haven't seen any of these, so I have no idea.
Well, you know, we'll tune in. You put some easy money. Nobody's got any horse in the race, so you can kind of just go with your gut.
It's not like sports for me. It's more like just, oh, that's cool. Whoever wins, great. So, supporting actress, we got Patricia Arquette from Boyhood, Laura Dern from Wild, Keira Knightley from The Imitation Game, Meryl Streep, Into the Woods.
That's surprising.
I am surprised. Now, unfortunately, I have not seen Into the Woods.
I saw it.
Really?
Yeah, we got sneak preview tickets at an event we went to.
We'll have to talk about that in a second. Emma Stone from Birdman, and that's it. So,
God, really got to see Birdman. One of the big news blurbs was during the Oscar nominations is Birdman got a lot of nominations.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everything I've heard is it's just an amazing film. In fact, it's like the iFanboy, again, they did a little thing about it. And they're like, the best thing you can do to go into this film is to not hear or read anything.
That's the problem. I watched the Half in the Bag guys do their sarcastic reviews.
Oh.
And with Birdman, you can't tell. Like with most movies, you can tell when they're making fun of it. Birdman being so off the wall, crazy, you can't tell when they're joking about what the movie's about or when they're serious.
Oh, well, that's good and bad because then you don't really know what going into. So anime feature film, though, there is a controversial omission here we'll talk about. But the
Everything isn't awesome. Yeah,
Big Hero 6, of course. The Box Trolls, also, you know, I've heard very good. How to Train Your Dragon 2, of course. Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah.
Song of the Sea, which I just saw a poster for, but I don't know.
I haven't heard
it looks interesting. Check it out. Tale of the Princess Kaguya.
Kaguya?
And that also sounds interesting.
Is it a Studio Ghibli?
Takahata, yeah, actually. Well, if it's not Ghibli, it's Takahata.
Okay.
Who's one of the guys at Ghibli. So that's kind of cool. I haven't seen any of these either. Of course, left off the Lego movie.
Very surprising.
Very surprising, because I think, and maybe it got a technical Oscar nomination, but as an achievement of film, it's pretty remarkable. Plus, it was a damn good movie. It was, you know.
Do you think they fault them for the live action portions of the film?
Maybe. You know, the rules with the Oscars are somewhat difficult sometimes to parse. And it's quite possible that that's what happened, but I don't know. There's a bunch of other things. The only other one, we'll skip the rest of these. The only one I usually definitely care about is the music stuff, because I'm a big music score fan.
Original soundtrack.
Yeah, so original score, Grand Budapest by Desplat. I have that on DVD. I love it. Or CD. It's really good. Imitation Game, also by Desplat. Man, works. He's the hardest working composer these days. I see him all over the place. I'm sure that's good. Interstellar by Hans Zimmer. I also have that soundtrack. We're going to talk about Interstellar here in a little bit. Jeff just saw it. You can see it cut either way. I don't think it'll get it.
Yeah.
But I do like it. Mr. Turner by Gary Yershin. Never heard of that. And The Theory of Everything by Johan Johansson. I believe Johan Johansson,
what an unfortunate
name, if I'm not mistaken, is Icelandic. I think he's part of Oh, it's Yancey. It's, oh gosh. Well, his name is Jonesy, and I may be completely wrong about this. And I can't think of the band.
What, Bjork's old band?
No, it's another band from Iceland that I really like. And it'll come, Sigur Rós. I think Johan Johansson is also part of that, but I may be wrong. So that's cool. I'll have to check that out. So, and then, oh, well, one more. Music original song. Everything is Awesome. Did get nominated for original song, which is good, even though it's a stupid song, but it's meant to be. Glory from Selma. Grateful from Beyond the Lights. I'm Not Gonna Miss You from Glen Campbell. I'll Be Me. Okay. And Lost Stars from Begin Again. So, you know, of all those, I could see Selma getting it, but I could also see Everything is Awesome just as a, here's a bone, have fun.
Here's a pity Oscar.
Nothing, yeah, pity Oscar. Yeah, I mean, everything else is, you know, usual exciting stuff. So I'm, I don't know. We'll see what happens. For our geeky stuff. It does look like, X-Men did get an Oscar nom. Guardians got an Oscar nom. Captain America Winter Soldier got an Oscar nom. Those are for visual effects. And Nightcrawler. I almost got excited.
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Jake Gyllenhaal got a, screenplay, original screenplay. So that's the Oscar nominations. Now, obviously, when it gets a little closer, we may have more of a strong opinion. We might revisit this going forward, but...
And hopefully, if we actually get a chance to see some of these Oscar-nominated pictures.
And the Oscars themselves, yeah, we'll talk about it later. Now, real quick, we're not going to belabor this, but we did see a few movies. Specifically of note, The Hobbit.
Yeah.
I think Jeff and I saw it.
I have not.
Have you seen any of The Hobbit films?
I saw the first two and became less and less interested.
So... Here's the thing about that. I mean, and I totally understand. I think The Hobbit...
It's the shortest one.
Yeah, it was short. The third Hobbit, Battle of Five Armies. It is very short relative to the other two, although it still clocks in over 2 hours, I believe.
If it is, it's just barely.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically a little bit of the aftermath of Smaug, which, you know, he survives the attack in the mine.
Well, the end of the second one, he was going to destroy Lake Town.
And basically does it. You know, spoilers. If you haven't read The Hobbit or seen the animated thing or don't know the story, sorry. But yeah, that happens. And then there's some little bits of traveling between the old city and the Dan? No, what's the name of the city?
Oh, hell.
It's not Dan.
Not Dan.
Something like that.
Basically,
it's the human city outside of the mines. So it's, you know, they're basically taking refuge there because there's still structures. The dwarves led by Thorin Oakenshield, who is pissed about, he's being like turned by the gold and of course greed, you know, all that. He's pissed that they're setting up shop, and then pissed even more. They basically come over and they demand a part of the settlement because basically if not for the dwarves taking back the mines, their little water town, boat town, river town would not have been destroyed. So, that's like about a good 45 minutes, I think. Plus, you've got some stuff, and this is probably my favorite part. You've got
Dale.
I know somebody's name.
Random other person's name.
Well, I think my favorite part of the movie really has to be the battle with the Necromancer, who is basically Sauron.
Oh, the wizard throwdown?
Yeah. And it is probably that moment for fans that just, you know, cause I know in the book, you know, Gandalf fights him. I don't think. Actually, you know, I don't know that Gandalf actually fought him then. This is where my murky knowledge of the books, plus reading like the Silmarillion and reading all the other crap, like it all sort of blends together. But basically, in the movie version, Galadriel, Saruman, and Gandalf kind of...
And Elrond.
Elrond, that's thank you. They kind of take on Saruman.
And his
Sauron, and drive him back.
And the nine kings, the nine ring wraiths.
Right. So, you know, and at first I was kind of like, well, wait a minute. How does this affect Lord of the Rings? Because if they take him out, kind of, they banish him. But what they're really doing is they're banishing him to Mordor, right?
Well, no, and that was the thing. Galadriel in the movie destroys what little ability he had to have any kind of corporeal form.
Yeah.
So that's why all through Lord of the Rings, he's just an eye.
Okay.
And he's just like, that is his, He has no physical form anymore. He's just this thing, this essence.
But he also gets sent back to Mordor, whereas he was trying to get a toehold in that part of the space, wherever that was. I forgot. Gol Dol Guldur.
Yeah, that place.
What is cool also is Radagast the Brown comes back and actually a couple key moments and does some cool stuff. And, of course, seeing Sylvester McCoy, the Seventh Doctor, as Radagast the Brown, it was pretty cool, too. So, like, that was my favorite part of the movie. The rest of the movie was actually the battles. And, I mean, clearly the battles were great and epic. You had orcs fighting, Uruk fighting dwarves, fighting humans,
but it essentially,
elves.
It was like 10 pages of book stretched out to an hour and a half a movie.
It really was. And then probably the most egregious, although people really just think that the love interest for Feely.
Oh, the
what's her name?
The elf, the lady elf.
Lady elf. Like, they think that's the most egregious addition, you know, all that. I feel like just the whole showdown with Thorin and the leader of the Uruk, which I know happens in the book, but the way they dragged that out was like the really just most egregious, like.
But I actually I did the whole go through the wiki and start reading up, and yeah, I don't even think whatever his name is, the leader of the orcs, I don't even think Thorin is the one who struck him down ultimately in the book. Oh. I think it was actually Billy Connolly's character.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Crap. I forgot whose name I forgot, too.
There's a lot of names.
There's a lot of names. But no, overall, I definitely enjoyed the movie. I enjoyed the whole Hobbit cycle.
My gay crush on Lee Pace continues.
Oh, Lee Pace. Who, evidently...
Spread him on a cracker.
Dating Thorin Oakenshield.
Well, that's the rumor. They haven't actually...
It's not official, because I don't even think Lee Pace or Armitage have come out.
No.
But it's widely... believe.
That's another reason why when we talk about TV, I have my theories as to what has happened.
Yeah, so good movie. If you like Tolkien, but you're not like a total fanboy, you should go see it. You'll enjoy it. If you are a purist, and I know a couple, Rick Worley, kind of a friend of the show, does Complete Waste of Time, the gay graphic novel / comic book now, about drawing twinks and abusing. That's kind of awesome. Basically, he's a Tolkien purist and just hates the movies. Still goes to them.
I was gonna say.
I was reading his Facebook posts and he's just complaining about this, complaining about that. I'm like, I understand. I have changed my mind from being a complete purist of like adaptations to understanding that, you know, you don't need to slavishly adapt. And a lot of times if you do, it will suffer as a movie.
Well, and that's the one mistake I think Marvel is making, where that if you have adaptations and you have things like that, one shouldn't inform the other. They should both be able to exist in their own universe. That's why I like Game of Thrones. I'm a Song of Ice and Fire purist, and I had to come to terms with that on the TV show.
Yeah.
And I've done that.
This is why I don't read, if it's something I know is coming out, and I know that it exists as a book or graphic novel, I will oftentimes not read it if I have not already. Because I don't want to be comparing it. I want to enjoy the movie as an experience. Then I'll go read the original work. And Game of Thrones has been like that, partly because I only got like halfway through the first book and sort of petered out. But like, I intend to go back and read it. Same thing like Harry Potter. I think, even though they did a pretty faithful adaptation for most of Harry Potter, you know, the first couple movies suffered, I think, because it was very slavish to the text. And they got a little bit away from that later and I think made better films. But, you know, overall, it's a fun, if you take away that literary, you know, honoring the memory of Tolkien, who himself admitted that The Hobbit had flaws. Like, he was not someone who was like, oh, my stuff's
perfect.
It was
a kid's book.
It was a kid's book. It was his first of these things. He learned a lot in Lord of the Rings and made it more interesting. So I have no problem with Peter Jackson coming along and his co-screenwriters and trying to...
sprucing it up a bit?
Sprucing it up, making it more interesting for today's audience. Nothing in it is so sacrilegious. I mean, I think my mom was complaining, or her mother's husband, Lou, was complaining about the barrel scene and how long the thing went on. And it's like, but again, it's a set piece. Action movies have these.
It's as simple as, if you've already seen the other five movies, just go see this. It's the last one.
Well, yeah, especially for the completest thing. Now, did you see it in high frame rate?
No, because I actually saw the marathon.
Oh, that's right.
And they did that with all three movies consecutively. It was about like 9 hours total. And yeah, that was not in high frame rate for any of them.
But you saw, I think, the first couple in high frame rate.
Yeah, I saw the first two. in high frame rate, and I actually was like one of the only people that enjoyed it in high frame rate. It didn't bother me.
Did you see these in high frame rate?
I saw the first film in high frame rate, and it was a little jarring to me.
Yeah. Did it? So my experience with it, and maybe this is yours, is it's very jarring at first. It feels like it's fake. It feels like it's
like a live TV show.
Yeah, it's a live television broadcast.
But at your brain adjusts to it after a while, and then you don't even think about it. Well, it just sort of looks.
The one thing I think didn't hold up the most in the high frame rate stuff are the special effects. Like, it's almost that first time that they showed HD and they had CG special effects, which were upscaled in HD. They really look inferior because they weren't originally designed like that.
Right.
I think it's the same idea with the high frame rate is, cause like in the first movie, that little, where they're cleaning up the kitchen and they're flipping the bowls and all that looked really fucking fake in the high frame rate.
The other thing, and I think Jackson even said this, is by the third one, since high frame rate was, like, they were the first movie, I think, to really do anything major with it. By the third one, it had gotten a lot better. Mm. And so the third one, I think, is the most seamless where you...
Did you see it in high frame
rate? Yeah, I saw all three in high frame rate. And I like it. I you know, coming out on Blu-ray, they're not in high frame rate.
Cause
the technology for the home isn't quite there. But with the newer TVs and with the newer frame rate, you could probably in the next few years have that experience at home. And the question is, would you want to? And I don't know. But the other thing I will say is I have the soundtrack. Howard Shores does some great work on these movies. I do think that this last one was not the most memorable soundtrack-wise, but I, you know, I'm gonna go back and listen to it. The first one of the Hobbits I definitely enjoyed, and
with all the
kind of go down from there.
That was all with the dwarf songs,
yeah,
and
which I, you know, they kind of didn't ever go back to. But, yeah. So that was that. Now you saw Interstellar. We've already talked a little bit about that, but you, I think, enjoyed the movie.
Yeah, I went in with the expectation after every review and every criticism I had heard that. It's a good love letter to 2001, and I didn't go into it thinking it was going to be some rompous action sci-fi adventure. I knew it was going to be more of an examination about, you know, bigger themes about, you know.
But it's also not as ponderous as 2001, and I love 2001. I'm not saying ponderous in a bad way.
No, it's more palatable.
It's very palatable, and it's much meant to, like, stride the line between blockbuster entertainment and science fiction with a capital S, you know, I mean, just like high idea science fiction. So
right.
I think it's excellent. I like Nolan. I know we're listening to iFanboy, we're listening to something. Somebody, it may have been Josh, was like, I don't really like Nolan's movies. I want to like him. I go see him, but
hell, I even saw Insomnia and thought it was pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, every movie he's made since Memento, and I never saw his first film.
Oh, Following?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it either.
I've seen all the other ones, and I've enjoyed, even if I had issues, and there's been issues with each of them. But, you know, the only thing about Interstellar, I will say, is in the IMAX experience, which I went to, I think we talked about this, it was deafening. The audio was, and I read it later, that's intentional. It was meant to convey the epic journey of space and the visceral sound of the... I'm like, no, I understand. It's kind of like the Bane audio all over again.
Right.
He might make a very bold choice with making the audio come out of all the speakers or whatever for Bane, but it was like, I just don't think it works.
Could you please give Bane subtitles?
Yeah.
Please just give him subtitles.
Yeah, that would have helped. But in this movie, it was fun.
Yeah, I liked it.
So moving on to TV, again, we're not going to go anything too in-depth, but we have some just little things to mention.
We had a plan. We had a plan to talk about a very important biopic.
Let's just say if you are on our Facebook or Twitter, you may have seen some live tweeting of the Whitney Houston biopic, Whitney. That was by our little friend Oral, who is unfortunately not here, as you know. So when he comes back, we are going to have a whole glorious celebration or condemnation, I'm not quite sure, of the movie Whitney. So look forward to that probably in the next couple episodes. Probably,
I will be taking the argumentative point of Bobby Brown.
Oh.
I'll be doing Bobby Brown's point of view.
That'll be fun. Now, I do want to talk some news, and specifically that's what Jeff was alluding to earlier. They have cast a character in the Hannibal series that is very important to the Hannibal, to Red Dragon specifically.
Yeah, the first book in the whole series, The Red Dragon.
Dollarhide?
Francis Dollarhide. He was played most recently by Ralph Fiennes in the movie, came out early 2000s.
Forgot about that.
Anthony Hopkins and Ed Norton.
Yeah.
The movie was okay, but yeah. You know, the movie had already been done before called Manhunter.
Which
back
I still
in the
haven't seen.
It was like Brian Cox, I think, played
as Hannibal. Yeah,
was the original Hannibal Lecter on screen? But yeah, Thorin Oakenshield is Francis Dolarhyde.
And if you've only seen him as Thorin Oakenshield, it may not make sense. But if you see him normal without the beard,
you might have seen him and not realized you saw him.
Yeah, he looks a little more like, okay, I could see him maybe being a crazy serial killer. But with the beard, he just looks, you know, rugged and
the prosthetic nose to fill out that beard.
Oh, that's right, they did give him a nose.
If you ever saw the first Captain America movie, he was the guy who shot Stanley Tucci, the Hail Hydra guy that oh. Steve has to chase down, and he
I did not
that's
know that.
Richard Armitage.
Wow, huh? Well, so it's interesting about this is again, if you follow the he is actually dating Lee Pace,
supposedly,
and Brian Fuller. Who worked with Lee Pace in Pushing Daisies, you know, likes to use people that he knows or people who know people. I don't know, because he's brought different people from different shows to other shows. You know, you were saying, I think, that you thought maybe Lee Pace would have been a good choice.
But that just means I'm holding out hope that Lee Pace is cast as Buffalo Bill.
That would be amazing. So, for those of you who don't know Hannibal, this is the third season that's coming out. They have tried to do a prequel series that echoes each of the three main books or movies, and they're ignoring the first, not the first, but the earliest prequel that Thomas Harris wrote, Hannibal Rising or something.
Oh, yeah, the basically the Hannibal origin story, which they actually are kind of doing in this new season.
They are alluding to it, yeah, and I heard her, and they even alluded to it in the second season, but basically each of the three seasons are meant to be echoes of Red Dragon, Hannibal, or Silence of the Lambs, and then Hannibal in this season. To a point.
Well, and what we've heard so far of season three, that's actually kind of true because they're doing a little span in Italy.
Yeah, so, you know, remember Hannibal, the movie or the book, he's kind of overseas on the run, and Julianne Moore is involved because she's starling in that movie and trying to find him and yet not catch him. Anyway, so, but they have announced that they're delaying the third season till summer.
Yes, normally was like a February airing, and then it would run through the end of that season. So, like, it would be like a 13-episode run.
Which, you know, I really love the show, so we're sad that it's delayed, but it does bode possibly well because summer ratings are, there's less to choose from. So it has a good chance of getting some traction, and that may mean it'll last for another season.
And also there's lower expectations for summer, so right. It could easily hit the numbers that NBC wants.
It's like the Friday night of the summer, of the year.
Of the year of airing shows, yeah.
So I'm excited. I hope it comes back, and well, I know it'll come back, but I hope it comes back again. And Gillian Anderson will also be playing a major role, which she's been in the last couple in a minor role, but it looks like this season she will have a bigger role.
Yeah, because I think her show that she was on NBC for got canceled, so yeah. I think she's all freed up.
Although I did read this week, they do want to bring X-Files back in some way, and they're just waiting for, they're waiting for, I'm sure, several things, but all the parties, you know, Fox is interested, Carter's interested, especially because his show didn't get picked up by Amazon. He had a show on there called The After or something like that. And, Gillian Anderson and Duchovny both said they want to come back.
Jared, did you watch X-Files?
I did.
Did you like X-Files?
I did.
Yep.
Did you make it through the whole series?
I did not, unfortunately, watch all the episodes. I just watched a couple here and there. And I saw the movies. So,
yeah.
I did not see the second movie, and I have it on Blu-ray. It's kind of a major omission. I also didn't finish the final season or watch the last episode because they kind of tried to tie it all up into a bow, and for whatever reason, I had just to stop watching, probably because they swapped out, they pulled the Duke Cousins sort of thing where they swapped out Mulder and Scully for the also-rans and,
well, and just,
surprisingly didn't last.
Just Mulder. And actually what's funny is you've ever heard interviews with Robert Patrick?
Yeah.
He explains the whole, what it was like for him to come in.
A nightmare, I'm sure.
Well, and Duchovny was still there, but he had to take a backseat role, and he actually was trying to get more into the directing side because he still directed episodes.
Yeah.
Even though he wasn't starring in them. And it was just, I mean, he's like, I had a good time, but it's like, imagine trying to follow that. Imagine trying to be the guy who shows up after the guy everybody loves.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes that sort of works, but it didn't. So anyway, that might be coming back. But the show we will talk about, of course, in a little more depth, is Agent Carter. This is the new Marvel show. It's only a 7-episode or 8-episode series. It's very short. Almost
it's an event.
It is an event series is how they're marketing it. Which is probably not a bad thing because, you know, I've seen what, the first three episodes have come out, I think, because they had a two-parter for the first night, and they had, I think, at least one more week since.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's, I don't think I could see it sustaining as well. But what I love about it, I do love it. It's very much to me a combination of Alias in a period like set in the 50s, early 50s. And it has bits of like the Avengers, sort of, in the dynamic between. So the main leads are Agent Carter, of course. If you saw Captain America, this is Sharon. No, Peggy, not Sharon.
This is Peggy.
So it's the original Carter girl.
Haley Atwell.
Haley Atwell. And, Jarvis.
Howard Stark makes an appearance in the first episode.
He's there in the background and it kind of touches on his legacy or the inventions he has people stole. But specifically, his butler.
Edwin Jarvis.
Yeah, he's in it.
Benedict Cumberbatch's long lost brother, I swear to God.
Kind of look like him. But, and they have wacky adventures trying to figure out who or what organization is behind the stealing of the technology and the fact that Howard Stark's framed. Because people think he's selling his technology to people using it for ill purpose.
If you like One Tree Hill, you got Chad Michael Murray in there.
I thought I recognized him, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah.
What is cool, though, is they mentioned the organization is Leviathan. So that's another sort of nod to the S.H.I.E.L.D. legacy.
It's like the Russian Hydra.
I think so. So, you know, overall, a lot of fun. But again, I could see why... It wouldn't sustain maybe a whole series.
Well, like, okay, so I watched it on Hulu because I don't have cable. Even though it's ABC, I could have watched it live. They put it on Hulu. So I didn't know that the first night was a two-parter.
Right.
You just know it because it's separated.
Two episodes.
So we watched the first two. First episode was good, very kind of middle of the road, trying to just establish the plot.
Right.
Second episode, I thought, took a turn where it was sillier than the other episode.
Yeah, no, there is a sense of humor that the show has, kind of like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that is a common thing in Marvel these days, in the movies, certainly, and in some of the comics.
But like, there was even like the whole scene with her underneath the guy's desk trying to Jimmy open the drawer and she bumps her head. These are like almost pratfalls.
A little unnecessary, and yeah, it was kind of zany. But they are also trying to do this thing like Alias did where, you know, you're working as sort of a double agent.
Quadruple agent.
So she's working for the SSR?
SSR, the Strategic Science Reserve or something like that.
Basically the predecessor to S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, their logo is even a bird of some kind.
But they don't use her in any good like capacity. I mean, she was a badass agent in World War II, and they're kind of keeping her as a secretary.
Nah, she was Captain America's sweetie.
But, I mean, you know, she's a badass. So, like, you know, she feels a little underappreciated. Sorry. And then Jarvis comes along and Howard Stark and they're like, hey, help us clear our name. And oh, by the way, you're caught. You're probably gonna look like you're a traitor. So just be aware. So it plays off that the end of the third episode, I think, is where they have a death in one of the regular characters.
Yeah.
That was a bit of a shock. Although, yeah, at one point you're like, oh, this guy's going to die because he finds out basically that
they did the Coulson. Like as soon as you find out about his love life in intimate detail.
Yeah.
Like, oh, they're going to kill him.
Yeah, so I mean, like, that, but that they killed him, it took that, you know, light tone and made it a little more somber, and they played it pretty somber. So, you know, it's cool. In the women's hotel, she stays in a hotel where there's only women, and there's like a matron that sort of runs everything, which is kind of an odd, weird thing, but.
Yeah, the one scene with the boyfriend climbing up the fire escape, it looks like it's somebody trying to come to get Peggy, and it turns out it's just some guy looking for his honey.
Yeah. I did like seeing James Urbaniak play a crazy scientist in there.
Mm.
That was always cool. That's the voice of Dr. Venture, among other characters on Venture Brothers. So yeah, no, it's fun. It's an event series. After it's over, she'll pick back up.
Yeah.
The thing I am most like, and maybe it does dovetail somewhat by the end, but I kept thinking it was going to set up something or S.H.I.E.L.D. They were going to interlock somehow.
Some kind of Inhumans
but
thing.
So far not. And that may change, but. It is a different production team, or the same production team, different creators, different showrunners. It's not the S.H.I.E.L.D. people. So I don't know. We'll see what happens with it. But I definitely think if you like a period piece, or you like just spy capers, you loved Alias, you should check it out.
Or if you don't like it, well, give it a few more weeks, it'll be off the air.
Exactly. Moving on, video games.
Video games!
I definitely wanted to talk a little bit.
Speaking of Lord of the Rings,
Shadows of Mordor, because We're not going to belabor the video game thing. We actually had our last episode was the Gay Gamers Group Roundtable, which I will say this. I had at least one person express to me some dismay that we did not, or we were not more worked up and angry about the fact that gay characters are not better represented in video games.
They're not represented.
Well, they are somewhat, but no, you're right. Overall, they're not.
They're not represented. They're represented as, it's a choice. You can make it over here if you want, but they're never featured.
Well, this is Flame On, not Fox News. Yeah. So.
But basically, you know, they were, yeah. And I said, like, well, we just weren't that worked up about it. Like, we can still enjoy video games and not be offended. Because I don't think the choices are made to be offensive. I'm only offended when you're trying to offend me. I'm not going to be offended if you make an innocent remark or you're making jokes and you're kind of, you know, doing whatever. Like, that doesn't offend me. If you come at me and you think my lifestyle or my orientation or my whatever is offensive to you and you're, you know, saying things or doing things to piss me off, well, then I will get pissed off.
Right.
But it's the same thing with gaming. I think we need to raise awareness. We need to get more of the representation out there, but it's not something that I'm going to be upset about. You know what I mean?
Also, it's going to take time because you look at the people that make the games, the people that greenlight games that they want to get made. There's the hierarchy of this. Probably not a lot of gay proliferation through that. Yeah. They don't want to make a game like that because they don't think it'll sell.
Well, and it all comes down to marketplace, you know, economics.
I mean, especially in this age, because third-party developers, that's why everybody complains about DLC. And what's going on this weekend is actually this game called Evolve. It's from the makers of the Left 4 Dead series.
Oh.
But it's five people. One person plays as a giant monster, and the other four play as hunter people trying to kill the giant monster.
Didn't you play this in the beta or something?
Oh, I played it in the alpha. It was in the closed alpha.
I know
now it's
talked about it, yeah.
Now it's an open beta for anybody that wants to play.
Oh, check it out.
But the problem is this game, when it comes out, there's all this complicated DLC that you can get where you get extra monsters, you get skins, you get blah, blah, blah.
Oh, they're doing that.
All these different pricing models for AAA publishers, because if a game comes out at that level and doesn't sell well, it's no longer just a write-off of, oh, the game didn't do that well, let's go to the next one. It's, no, the game didn't sell well, this company is folding.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it, even companies as good as, like, Rebel, was that who did Bioshock?
Irrational Games.
Irrational, yeah, like they folded after a very successful launch and game release. You know, it shows the mechanics and economics of game publishing and why these little indie studios that are doing stuff that goes up on Steam, that's a far
more lucrative
and possibly stable, you know, because you don't have so much overhead and sort of the bullshit politics. We have Tiburon in town that does a lot of stuff, and I'm not speaking ill of Tiburon necessarily, but certainly in EA there are issues in the way they run things. And
Tiburon, if anything,
contractual stuff, it's a problem.
Well, Tiburon was a developer that was built on sports games.
Yeah.
And the times that they ventured off and tried other things didn't turn out very well.
Well, I'm speaking more to the way they treat their employees and the fact that,
it's a meat grinder.
We in the simulation industry, which is where I work, we hire burned out and former game programmers because they want stability. They want to work normal hours, and we're going way off the rails here. But point is, you know,
talking about video games, it all fits.
The game industry is difficult to do well in.
So imagine somebody trying to propose a game where the major character is
at
gay.
At a major company.
And thinking, maybe this might alienate some people. It might not be that big of a seller.
Which is why places like BioWare, mm-hmm. companies that make it a priority, I'm very impressed by, because they're able to push the social agenda, so to speak, and yet have very successful games.
Right.
But again, I think the real groundswell is going to come from these indie publishers, you know, the small teams that make these casual games like the RuPaul game, or they make some fancy new game where the lead character is homosexual or a lesbian and nobody cares.
Well, and that was what was alluded to. Remember the game came out a couple years ago, Gone Home?
Yeah.
It was a first-person game, but it was you just exploring a house. You didn't know the story,
okay.
But nobody's in the house, and as you're exploring, you're getting more information, and you're kind of building the story.
Okay.
And
sounds familiar.
I read a lot of reviews about it, and the overall consensus was, by the end of the game, you play the daughter of a family who's in a lesbian relationship, and it's like your family coming to terms with you as a lesbian, and it's this big thing, but they don't ever overtly say it and put it directly on the nose. But it was a very good game.
Well, so, and we talked, well, again, we don't want to belabor this because we talked about this a lot last time. And Well, the point, going back to the criticism is, you know, we are just giving our opinions. If you are upset by it, please lobby your game publishers.
Write your congressman.
And support indie efforts. Our friend Matt Kahn, who GamerX Read Only Memories just came out. That was a Kickstarter thing that I backed, and they are doing the same kind of thing as an indie game. Back those people, and they'll keep making stuff.
Yeah.
But Shadows of Mordor, I just want to talk a little bit. I talked a little bit last week, so I don't believe this, but I definitely think if you're a Lord of the Rings fan and or, and or Assassin's Creed or Arkham Asylum, I think...
it's got a little bit of everything.
I did, just as an update, get past the part where the game changes a slight bit and you go from killing orcs or Uruk-hai to... or Uruks or whatever, to controlling and directing. Which is
you basically
cool.
build your own army.
Which is the game has been a lot of fun so far, but when that... And people were telling me about it a little bit. I was like, oh, that's cool. It's definitely changed, and for the better, because you can still kill them. But now you have another choice, which is kind of nice in a game, to not have to kill, but rather to use those resources in a different way. So, very thrilled that that's out there. Also, tried to avenge my brother's death a couple times.
Well, and that's some of the stuff that I love. It's these little things they added for, like, since Brian and I both have it on PC, and we're both friended on Steam, if, let's say, one of these big guys, these big Uruks in the game kills me, then in his game, that same guy is wandering around on his map, and it pops up on his little thing saying, hey, this guy just killed your brother. If you kill him, you get a little bit of a bonus for getting revenge. And that's awesome.
Yeah, no, I thought that was a really nice touch.
That's a great way to mix single player and multiplayer, because so many people don't want to buy a game and be forced into multiplayer.
Oh, I have friends at work who absolutely will not play like a WoW or whatever. They want that experience as a single player game. And if there's little things that come over, or if they can do like a little game with their friends, they just don't want to deal with random people online who are obnoxious and or annoying.
13-year-old kids that are just going to swat them if they don't. Destiny?
No, well, Destiny maybe, but what's one that's
Call of Duty?
Really popular in that same...
Call of Duty?
No, it's more like a fantasy game.
Give me more to go
it's
on.
It's like a massively single-player game. But you can play with your friends. It's been around for a while, everybody's played it.
EverQuest?
It's a dungeon crawl.
Asheron's Call?
No, but it's a single-player. But you can play like with a small group.
I have Destiny,
but it's fantasy. Anyway, that's fine.
Sci-fi fantasy.
I'll think of it in like 5 minutes. Like, anyway, so back to the gaming, real just quick favorites from our Steam sale, because that just happened. I picked up Shadows of Mordor actually there for $30. I think I got Age of Mythology, which I loved the Age of Empires series.
I got Metal Gear Solid Revengeance. For like $5.
Saw that. Didn't get it.
That was, it's from, if you like Bayonetta, the crazy over-the-top action, there's no possible way this would actually ever happen. He's killing people with a katana that's attached to his foot.
Oh.
Because it's, if you ever played the Metal Gear series, it's the Raiden, the much derided character you were forced to play as in the second Metal Gear Solid game.
Oh.
It's this blonde-haired kid who is in now like this badass cyber ninja. And, it's crazy over the top action,
Interesting.
I also got a lot of like indie hardcore games like VVVVV and, I got Super Meat Boy, the really challenging platformer games that indie developers have put out.
I did also get the, Native Alaskan game, and I can't think of the title.
Club Baby Seals?
No. It was actually funded by, I believe, a cultural grant to explore Native Alaskan, Native American culture, Inuit culture. Anyway, it sounded interesting, and I watched like a little trailer. It was like $6. And it looked beautiful. Music was beautiful. So I was like, all right, I haven't played it yet, but I'm very excited to get to that. I did not get, I'm pissed, I should have gotten the one from Bastion. We talked about it last time.
Transistor.
Yeah. And so now I'm like watching if it does go back on sale, I'm totally picking it up because everything the guys talked about the game made me just go, oh, I really want to play this.
Yes, as a musician, I'm sure you'd appreciate it a lot.
Yeah, I know. And then I read or found out from them that it was a musician game. So gay news. There's news.
Florida's almost not crazy anymore.
We finally have gay marriage.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny because we saw it slowly coming and we knew it was, there was this court case. We knew it was going to happen.
It was percolating.
Percolating. Pam Bondi tried her best to get it shot down by the Supreme Court. They said no.
Hey, she was just acting on what the public wanted because of what they voted.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. That's not supposed to.
I can appreciate the argument that they have for that. But I think Pam Bondi went above and beyond.
Yeah.
As a political thing. Because I don't think at the end of the day Pam Bondi has, I don't think she cares. I think it's to her. She probably has gay friends. She probably is in a position. Like, I want to give her the benefit of the doubt.
That's nice
that,
of you.
I know. The, her and her administration, Rick Scott, they're just all they care about. There's stuff coming out daily almost about the abject political corruption that is in their administration and just the meshing of politics and policy and in a bad way for them. So anyway, you know, whatever. They lost. We won. I am not running out and getting married. Pat and I are not quite to that point. You know, we're not like out there. People kept, why are you getting married? Get married? I'm like, no, I just because now we can, that doesn't mean I'm going to rush out and just go do it.
Well, that was the fun argument that people kept making about when this all started really popping last year is every time that somebody would make a joke about it was the, you know, the joke of, well, you had this gay couple and now one of them is like, so when are we getting married? And the other one's like, shit, now I actually have to worry about that next step.
And the only thing that really complicates it a little bit is the fact that previously, like I, with my ex and then with Pat, I had them both as domestic partners on my benefits because they have domestic partner benefits because there was no gay marriage. Now that there is gay marriage, the question is, what happens to domestic partner benefits? Do you lose them if you don't turn around and get married?
Oh, yeah.
Some places are suggesting that that is exactly what's going
to
happen.
We need to enact common law.
Well, you know, and then the good thing is, in this case, Pat's basically getting, you know, dental off my benefits. He's got his own medical because it made more sense financially for tax purposes. But again, now that we can get married, you know, is that going to go away, you know, at the end of the year? Like, I don't know what's going to happen. So it's funny because it's a victory. I mean, obviously, I'm so grateful and happy that everyone who wants to, our friends Keith and Jeff got married. Of course, they were married before, but they finally have it legally recognized.
Made it Florida official.
Yeah. I mean, other couples and, you know, the list of things that it does for you as a couple, you know, we've probably gone into before. Medical visits, you know, rights of survivorship, property ownership, the transfers, pension, transfer, like all of that stuff that people just take for granted and they think, oh, well, why do you want to corrupt marriage and why do you want to da-da-da? It's like, that's not even a point.
I will say,
the point is all this other stuff.
If you beat me to the altar, I'm going to be pissed.
No. Well, you have a date, though, right?
Yeah, so, and you have a date to beat.
Well, yeah, but I'm not. And then the other side of it is kind of like being in that sort of second-class citizen, sort of not having marriage. Like, I just kind of assume that I never would, and it just sort of would never really happen. I think that's part of it. Even with my ex, like, I just kind of thought, well, we're never really going to get married because we can't. So
right.
I don't have to think about, like, the wedding and planning and the expense. And,
it's fun. It's fun. Let me tell you about it.
No, I don't. And that's the thing. I don't think if Pat and I do decide to do that or whatever, I don't think it would be a huge spectacle. But at the same time, you know, who knows? Things like that quickly get out of control. And other people in your family just want to do it up. So I don't know. But it's great. I'm very happy. If we can get a little bit more acceptance of the adoption stuff, which is still somewhat county by county.
Yeah.
Hell, even the marriage thing is county by county in a sense. The county's basically said, we're done. We're not going to give any more marriage licenses to anybody from the state, you know, representatives. But the thing about those counties is all you need is a lawyer who has the, actually, you don't even need a lawyer. You need a notary.
Oh.
A notary can marry you.
Got a couple of notaries in the family.
Yeah. So, I mean, even if you're in that area, I think it's like North Florida, north of us in Florida, and go to a notary and, hey, get us hitched. So, mazel tov. Very happy for that. In other gay news, I'll talk about MAL because I have something I would like to read about MAL. For those of you who don't know, Mid-Atlantic Leather is an event that is one of the major leather conventions in the United States, at least.
Have they ever had Judas Priest play?
I would not be surprised if Rob Halford said anything.
That's it?
I wouldn't be surprised if he showed up, because I know he was kind of into that. But there's so many people at this thing. It's at the Hyatt Regency, which is a hotel very close to the Capitol. It's in the district, but I mean close to the Capitol building. It's a fascinating, like, microcosm of weird, and I say weird not in a judgmental, like, you're weird, but just off of the norm sort of sexual and identity expression.
Counterculture.
Counterculture.
Taboo.
In fact, we were actually going to the HRC store in D.C., and we had an interesting discussion. We were there for like an hour.
HRC?
Human Rights Council.
There you go.
HRC's Council. Anyway, they're the big, the equal sign. They're like a big political action group that does fundraising for gay and lesbian causes and acceptance. But what was interesting is they were talking, about how as much as the gay community is a big community and we all love each other and we all accept each other for being who we are, all that stuff, there's still stigma in the gay community for groups like the Bears, like the trans community, and like the leather community, leather and bondage.
There's splinter groups.
Yeah, and how it's sort of like a, it's sort of an odd, like, family where we love everybody in our family, but they're a little weird over there. We're just going to kind of keep them at arm's length. But anyway, so we had an interesting discussion with them about this. But one of the things at the MAL convention that's fascinating is the Puppy Bowl. Have I told you about the Puppy Bowl before?
No. Does it involve actual puppies?
I am terrified.
You should be. The Puppy Bowl, and by
just
the
think,
way,
it's a whole bunch of Havocs all going for your business.
Please understand that if you are into pup play or you whatever, I think that's fantastic. I really have no problem with you, but be prepared to be slightly offended if you are easily offended, because we're going to make fun of you in a grand sense of your group.
Wait, these aren't actual puppies?
No.
I'm sad.
So puppy play is when a person wants to act like a dog. Or a puppy, really, because they're very energetic, whatever. And they either can dress like a dog. They may have a face, sort of a mask slash hood with a mouth that opens and a little tongue. Or just a leather, like, you know, puppy, like, gimp hood almost. Then they may wear other, like, parts of their outfit. They have, like, a lock on necklace that they wear. Their owner holds the key kind of thing. And they may also have a butt plug. That is
as a tail?
A tail.
Hey.
And in fact, we saw all of that pretty much at the Puppy Bowl. So the Puppy Bowl is a bunch of the, I guess, masters or whoever, I don't know, the owner of the puppy, brings their pups to the little area, and they all, like a dog park, basically walk around and like play with squeaky
teacher,
toys.
Teacher, I have a question.
Uh-huh.
Do they have poopy bags?
Yeah. So there is not as much, to my knowledge, and someone can correct us online, that sort of, you know, there is an element that does that. We heard about that, too.
There is a full commitment.
Well, or there's people who are just into having diapers and being changed. But the puppy people are not necessarily that. So, no, they're not doing that part. But they are, like, you know, encouraged to sort of frolic and sniff each other's butts and,
That's
play with toys and all that. And they can be checked out to be taken as a, they can be adopted. Is what thing. So what I in the MAL packet, they had a thing here, and it's for the puppy park, they call it actually. And I wanted to read you the rules because I think they're kind of hysterical. So I'm going to read these real quick. Guidelines for safe puppy play, and they say puppy, that's fine. And interaction at the puppy park. Number one, be mindful of gear or articles that can cause injury to other pups, jewelry or articles/gear that can get caught. And cause injury should be avoided in the play area.
So like spike collars and stuff?
I assume. Hard-soled boots and spike collars are not permitted in the play area.
There you go.
That makes sense. That's fine.
Seems pretty obvious.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. Number two. Approach a pup as you would a bio dog.
What the fuck is a bio dog?
Biological dog. Don't run up to the pup, yell, grab, or try to pet them. Ask the owner/handler for permission. Approach them from the front, so they can see you. And in parentheses, some hoods restrict vision. Hold your hand out and let the pup come to you first. If the pup doesn't, turns or growls, let them be. Either they don't want to come to you or may not have permission. Okay? It gets better.
Okay.
Number three, do not pull on a pup's tail. We now know why that is the case. It is disrespectful to the pup and can cause injury.
Start a lawnmower.
Do not pull, number four, on a pup's collar. It is disrespectful and can cause injury. Well, that's fine. Five, ask to pet a collared pup. I think they already said that earlier, but all right. 6, not all uncollared pups are strays. I didn't even know about that.
There's a whole subsect of puppies that are strays?
I guess. I don't know.
They're the untrained ones. They're wild.
7. Chatting / talking with pups can be distracting. It can interfere with the pup's headspace. So,
they have to get, they need a moment to get in character.
In character, it's like a thing. And so if you start going, oh, hey, Bob, how are you doing? You know, good to see you again. You know, that just,
they're real method. They're real like, what's his name?
They're method actors.
Right. It's a really Stanislavski kind of a thing.
Yeah, I like that. That's interesting. It can be, 8, disrespectful for some pups to be in public. Please be respectful that not all pups are at ease as others. So you have your introvert pups, you have your extrovert pups, you know, all that stuff.
Is there a potential for a red rocket to just randomly happen?
I would hope. I would. Yes. 9. Ask before feeding pups treats, as some pups have allergies. Now, I did not see any pups getting treats. I would take this completely the wrong way. But in the space that we were in, I don't think that would have been encouraged.
Guy just walks in the middle of a puppy park with a big thing of peanut butter.
that's pretty awesome. So that's good. 10. Scritches are almost always welcome. And I assume, again, there's a few misspellings here. Scratches.
I was going to say.
Scritches is a term.
Oh, what is that?
Do scritches get stitches?
If I remember correctly, it's just like scratching behind the ear.
Okay.
Something like
okay,
that.
So that's a technical term. Okay, good. Okay. I did not know that. Okay, 11. This is what I suspected because we didn't see it. Nudity is not permitted in public spaces. Genitals cannot be exposed, and the butt crack must be covered by at least a 1-inch strap. Now, that is not just true of puppy play. That is true in the Mid-Atlantic Leather convention area. It's the whole hotel. So you come down the escalators and you're in the lobby. From pretty much that space around, it's supposed to be like this. But we saw plenty of exposed ass because they have the ass as chaps, or they have like a kilt that comes up. Or
since when you put an actual measurement on it, it reminds me of our upbringing at a private Christian
6
school.
6-inch rule.
Girl with the woman with the ruler comes by. Does she actually measure your leather strap? Like, nope, less than an inch. Gonna need you to go home and change.
Yeah, that would be kind of hilarious if somebody did that. And finally, 12. Remember, it's all fun and games until someone ends up in the cone of shame.
Aw, they have human-sized cones?
I didn't see anybody in the cone of shame, but I guess. We did. So another thing about MAL, and then we'll move on. There's this thing called the fishbowl. And so the hotel is kind of like an atrium where there are rooms with windows that are exposed out to this like two floors of like a connecting to close out the atrium.
Okay.
And the rest is open to the street. If you go up to those floors, you can look down into the rooms if those rooms are open, if their windows are open. And so the fishbowl then becomes basically where you would go up.
Catch a show
looking down into the rooms. We did not do that this year, but last year we had done that. And
do the people that move go in those rooms sign like a waiver?
No. But they know what they're getting into. If they don't, they're new to the convention.
Okay.
Because it's been here for several years, and people tend to like to have these rooms for, well, obvious reasons. Now, I bring all this up because of the pup play thing, because at least once probably per year, if not more, there is somebody in a cage that you can see from the fishbowl the entire weekend. They don't seem to leave the cage.
They're like the permanent go-go dancer.
But it's not a cage where they would be standing. This is a dog kennel. So this is a pup that is basically getting, I guess, his jollies off of being locked in a cage at this convention where everybody and everybody is out there frolicking and doing whatever.
He's being crate trained.
Exactly. So that has happened both years. We saw it ourselves last year, and then someone said they saw it this year. So there you have it.
That sounds
Mid-Atlantic Leather.
Amazing.
All right. We have a question, and we'll throw this out there, and we'll talk about it, and then we'll dig into just a little bit of comics before we wrap this up. But of course, we are looking for and always welcome questions for Flame On. Post them on our Facebook wall. Send them as a tweet to Flame On Podcast. Email at any of our names at flameonshow.com.
I'm sad. I don't think I've gotten a single email since I've been added to the show.
I got one actually, that I will read here in a second. I got it just yesterday, I think. But we do have a question from a while back when we solicited, one of the gay geek, Orlando Gay Geek members gave us one. So I want to read that. But again, we're looking for more. Please send these on. We love them. This is from Chris. He asks, or basically kind of a statement / question. For the most part, superheroes swap partners at the frequency of Pokemon cards on the schoolyard. Most of us are the same way. We can't hold on to a significant other. Do you think that is because in today's world, the next, quote, fish in the sea, quote, is so easily accessible, or is it because we, as minorities, cannot commit to due to our own social issues and insecurities? Or are we just a bunch of assholes and sluts that don't want to commit to anything longer than it takes to get our jollies off? Well,
that's a loaded question.
It is, and I've been thinking about it a little bit. You know, maybe here and there for about an hour or so, I'll just sit and ponder these. No, but no, I've actually, this has popped up a few times because I don't know. I don't think I would blame society. I don't think I would blame the cultural acceptance being a thing. But at the same time,
I'd blame all of the above.
I mean, there's aspects of it that must play a role. But at the end of the day, it just comes down to, do you want to stick with the person that you're with and make the hard choices to do that and acknowledge that it's not just about you, it's about both of you? Or is it easier for you, in this case, whoever, to just find the next thing? Because, you know, and then there's the whole, you know, sexual addiction, and there's the whole, you know, the endorphins that are released when you're just falling in love and lust and all that stuff. So I think all of it plays a role.
Well, there are multiple facets to this. I could throw in personal experiences. One, I don't know what I want. But, you know, each long-term relationship I have, I learn more and more about what I want from a romantic partner. But that same token, apparently I have just terrible taste in men, in general. So.
That also happens. Mm-hmm. The men that you are most attracted to are the ones that are the worst for you, or the women in some cases.
I was gonna say, I could give you my perspective as a straight man.
That's I think it's equally valid.
I think that the most valuable thing, and Jared is on the right track with this, is there is nothing wrong with having a lot of relationship experience to build what you see as the ideal partner. A lot of people look at it as, oh, you date so much, you're just a slut, you know, or you don't know what, you know, you're just making mistakes after mistakes. Like, well, no, I'm exploring what I need in my life that makes me happy.
Yeah.
Ultimately, though, you should be doing all that, even finding the person you're going to spend the rest of your life with. You should be first coming to terms with who you are.
Yes.
Because you cannot possibly find the right person out there unless you know who you are as a person.
And if you can't love yourself, how the hell are you going to love somebody else?
Fucking man!
I'm reminded of The Matrix, the quote of know thyself.
True, though. Like, I think the woman I am currently with, I've been with for, what was it, going on seven. We just did
My
six.
Goodness.
And we're getting married next January. But up until that point, the longest relationship I had been in was 4 years. Three of them were actually a relationship.
I didn't realize that was...
The last year of that was like the slow death of the relationship. But everything else was like 6 months, a couple months, maybe 8 months, 10 months. And they were all horrible for me. They're perfectly fine in their own right. Probably some of them you could see are the devil. But... The reason I went with them was because it was out of convenience. This is what was presented, and it was the easy path. It wasn't, this is what I want. It was, oh, they like me. Okay.
Yeah, and I think there's a part of that that everybody goes through at the beginning where they're with the person they're with in part because, hey, yeah, they like me. This is cool. But if your communications are not strong, if you can't be open and honest and really get to the things that make you happy, or they're not willing to adapt or change. And, you know, it's not like you're supposed to change people, but let's be honest, being in a relationship changes both parties for different things. And a good partner is receptive to the needs of their partner.
And no matter what, though, in any relationship, if there comes a time when the relationship is beyond toxic, and it could happen for any reason. Mm-hmm. It could happen for, you know, it could become toxic simply because you two have changed up in different ways.
You've grown apart.
You've grown apart. It's up to you, if you properly know who you are, to recognize when it's worth fighting for and when it's worth acknowledging that you're as happy as you could possibly be, and that you would be healthier apart.
Yep. I went through that, and I chose to cut bait and, you know, leave. And it was the hardest thing I've ever done, but I ultimately felt that I could not sustain I could not be happy in that relationship projecting it down the road, you know. So it's tough. It really is a tough thing to go through. But let's apply superheroes, because again, his starting point was superhero swap partners.
Yeah.
But I mean, he's obviously going with the other metaphor. But do we think that Batman, obviously a Batman, I mean, he just gets a new Robin every few years.
I don't think he's ever had a girlfriend aside from Catwoman. It's like, oh yeah, there was that girl that was in a lot of the Batman books.
Yeah, no. Well, but I just mean like superhero partners, not even relationships. Like,
Does he mean relationships or does he mean partners?
I think superhero swap partners. I take that to mean partners like Batman and Robin, Batman's girlfriend.
I would take it to mean the significant others or like the pairings of like, you know, like Wolverine. He's got that list of ladies.
But either way, you know, do superheroes swap? And I don't think they actually swap like partners. You know, the classic duos remain even if the people are not the same. You know, the Robins, for example.
Or you have the Green Arrows where their sidekick just gets 8 different names until one of them is interesting.
Yeah.
Speedy or Red Arrow or Arsenal.
But I mean, I think superheroes are really a reflection of society, and you know, writers always want to put change, they want to put character growth, and they want to put drama to make a story interesting. So yeah, you're going to have I think higher proportion of drama in story than in real life.
But the problem is when people absorb enough of the material, do they start to enact?
And I feel like there is an element of that. I mean, certainly romantic love in the last 400 years, let's say, has evolved and changed to be something that was very unlike what it used to be. And I think part of that is because of fiction and literature
and culture.
Art and culture. Yeah, shaping and changing, and religion too.
It's MTV making us all short attention span, little ADHD people.
Well, in some ways it made us, I think, more interested in the romantic side of love than in the, you know, property and stability sides of a pairing, of the breeding, and you know, for him. So, I mean, it's like it has good things and bad, but, you know, overall, you know, comics reflect life, as any art does. And, you know, some superheroes, they're whores. They want to swap out the latest Robin for the latest model. They're on their little superhero grinder, looking for new sidekicks all the time. They have a little hookup / team up to, you know, make it work, you know, find out if it's gonna be something.
But then, you know, it depends on the writer. Some writers can make that relationship the backbone of a good story, like anything with Jonathan Hickman during the Fantastic Four run.
Such a good run. And
other people, they want to come in, and the first thing they want to do is flip the table and
get rid of Peter Parker's wife.
Break them up!
Yep. Their marriage never happened. All right, let's move on. So talking about comic books, we're not going to go too crazy deep, because basically I'm the one who really reads comics in this group. Eric and Oral, of course, you know, being contractually obligated to pitch comics to their customers. They are certainly up on the latest greatest. So we'll save all that for them. I do want to talk just briefly about Star Wars #1.
I did have a chance to read it.
This is, of course, the very ballyhooed and somewhat, in some places, I think, sort of derided, you know, Marvel taking back the franchise.
The ultimate cash in.
Yeah. And basically because Disney owns both. But what they did do, right, even though Dark Horse, unfortunately, for many years did carry the flame and deserves all the respect, what Marvel did do right with this sort of Star Wars #1 is they brought it back to the characters that people love. And I am not talking about Jar Jar Binks. I am not even talking about Obi-Wan Kenobi. I am talking about Luke, Leia, Han Solo.
And Qui-Gon, right?
No, not Qui-Gon.
Damn it!
And Boba Fett.
No, well, sort of.
Django. You meant Django? Django Fett.
Well, so Slave One sort of appears.
Mace Windu?
No.
Damn it!
The Emperor doesn't even appear, I think. But it basically, so the first issue by Jason Aaron and
John Cassaday,
you know, it's a fun romp. Yeah. It's set between the fourth and fifth movies, which, for those of you who don't, well, the parts 4 and 5, it's, you know, the original A New Hope and Empire, which is a very fertile time period. I mean, Brian Wood's Star Wars series set in the same era. very different, but similar in a sense.
Well, you know, in thinking about it as I was reading the first issue, it did occur to me, like, man, they really, looking back for where episode 5 picked up, a lot was unspoken that had kind of just like, okay, they had this big victory, and now they're on the run.
Yeah.
And Luke or Han and Leia have a little bit of a thing going on, and huh, okay,
yeah.
It's a very good potential for stories.
Yeah, so I mean, this is basically just a caper, a heist. They're trying to shut down a production facility, I think, on a planet. They got Chewie as a sniper with his crossbow, which is pretty cool. They have a 3PO sort of playing support, but eventually they thrust a blaster at him. They're like, "You need to help us. You need to, you know." Which is kind of ridiculous given the character.
They have Luke still coming to terms with his powers.
Yep. Vader eventually makes an appearance and sort of they show a possible confrontation between the two.
Man, Vader's such an asshole.
Yeah, well.
Just take these stormtroopers and block all the fire from the sniper.
So, I mean, and that's, you know, so, basically Jason Aaron is taking a lot of what works in Star Wars. He catches the tone really well. It's jokey, but kind of corny, but still kind of fun at the same time. And then they're bringing in elements like Vader with the stormtrooper body shield from like the video games and the animation stuff where the force powers became more and more ornate and kind of ridiculous. And of course, you know, and what was the Force Unleashed? You could throw the stormtrooper all over the place, which was just an amazingly fun thing to do. So, you know, it's an informed Star Wars adventure. I'll probably keep reading it. You know, it seems like it's fun enough. And, you know, it's not going to stomp all over continuity, of course, because they're not going to do that.
If anything, they might try to seed stuff that they could pay off story-wise in the new movies.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite possible. I tend to doubt that they'll do that, but you never know. It's possible. But it's just fun. If you like Star Wars, you like comic books, you should check it out. A lot of fun. And then, you know, otherwise, you know, there's a lot of good indie books. We're going to hopefully have, in an upcoming episode, we'll spend a little more time digging in some of the great indie ones. I wanted to talk about Odyssey and Jupiter's Legacy, which came back featuring the return of Frank Quitely after his, Mark Miller book that he's been working on hasn't been out for like almost a year, as is tradition. But we'll save all that for another episode. Thank you guys for listening. Please find us on flameonshow.com. We're Flame On as well on SoundCloud. And actually, I've been using that a lot lately to look for other stuff. So it's while you're there, you can, you know, subscribe to us. Or if you have iTunes, you can certainly find us there. Flame On Show at mention.com, at Flame On Podcast on Twitter. But pretty much everywhere else, Tumblr. We don't have an Instagram, but Tumblr and one other place I can't think of. Google Plus.
Grindr?
No. Well, we always tease on if you read our episode write-up, we always mention Grindr. But no. Not really.
No, one day.
Someday.
When the viewership drops off.
You know, I almost forgot real quick before we check out. I just want to give a shout out. I got an email, and it was kind of sweet because it backed me up on a point that I had made on a previous episode.
Oh, God, do you people know what you do when you reinforce his opinions?
Validation?
Don't do that.
Validated. It was amazing.
His ego can't fit in the room already.
So this is from B. Allen Price. And he, I'll just real quick. Hi, Brian. I've been meaning to write to say thank you, and I agree that a thicker skin needs to be grown, in this case, by both readers and by DC. No one can or should expect only positive portrayals of any community to be written, and DC's apology only fueled the fire that the story was unjust. Oh, well. I will get off my soapbox. I just want to say that you aren't alone in your opinion. It was, of course, about Batgirl, and they had a trans character, possibly like a drag queen, impersonating Batgirl. You know, I thought it was a fine issue, but you know, people were all pissed about it. Negative portrayal of, you know, trans characters out there. It's like, you know what? It's going to take all kinds of portrayals to have a realistic portrayal of life. And it was a ridiculous story. It's a comic book. It's meant to sort of be ridiculous. So, you know, if you're offended, then you're offended.
You're offended, you're talking about it, which got the goal, got the point across.
It made me buy it. Pick it up. So there you go. But thank you for Alan. For writing in. I do appreciate any time we have anyone write in, so please feel free. Brian at Flame On Show, Jared at Flame On Show, Jeff at FlameOnShow.com.
Write me, Oral, please.
Eric, anybody. We are looking for feedback. We're going to be changing things up, doing different formats in the future. There's all kinds of cool stuff we've been talking about, so please check back, and we will see you very soon on the interwebs. Thank you, and flame off.
Thanks for listening to Flame On, a podcast made possible by Powder Milk Biscuits, the ones in the blue box, a comic shop, and the generous support of tops and bottoms like you. If you want to be one of our sugar daddies, you can help out by telling a cute single friend about us, reviewing us on iTunes, or putting some dollars down our digital G-string in our monthly support drive. For more ridiculously entertaining and socially enlightening episodes of Flame On, as well as other fine programs, head on over to nerdyshow.com. You can subscribe to Flame On and all Nerdy Show Network podcasts via iTunes. And be sure to find us on Twitter at Flame On Podcast or Facebook on our Flame On fan page. And make sure to check out flameonshow.com for more nerdy queer in your ear.